I heard a story this week about a man by the name of Chester Wenger. He is a 98-year-old pastor of the Mennonite Church, but we should say former pastor of the United Mennonite Church. His story is this. He was a pastor since 1948, authorized by his church. Was a man of great faith. Served the church well. Sometime in his 20s, his son Phil came out as being gay. And he had a crisis of faith. He was a man of the church, a man of the cloth. And the Mennonite church doesn't believe in same-sex marriage. Phil felt ostracized and outside of his community of faith that he had grown up with. When Chester had come to a conclusion about his son, he accepted him. Still, he served his church, though. And when his son Phil wanted to get married in the state of Pennsylvania, when it became legal to do so, Chester wanted to marry his son. He wanted to perform the wedding ceremony for them, to do the vows for them. It was important for him to do so. And so he did. And in doing so, even though he had served the church for so long, so well, he had to turn in his credentials regretfully. He voluntarily did this in understanding why he had to do it. But he could not perform the ceremony out of love for his son, he said. And after all this had happened, he wrote a letter. He wrote an open letter to the Mennonite Church of the United States, and some of this is as follows. What is Jesus calling us to do with those sons and daughters who are among the most despised people in the world, in all races, in all cultures? What would Jesus do with these who are bullied, who have been abused, who have been sometimes sexually abused, who sometimes have been pushed into suicide at a far higher rate than those heterosexual people? Hans Frey has a saying called generous orthodoxy, which, if you look it up and think about it and study it, is an oxymoron. The two terms do not go together. Orthodoxy means tradition, means committed to that tradition and to the rules of an institution, orthodoxy. Generous, however, means to be open-minded, to be graceful, to be accepting. We need both, he argues, this theologian. Because orthodoxy without generosity leads to blindness of faith, and generosity without orthodoxy is shallow and empty. Romans, in the letter, Paul's letter to the Romans, it says this, I am not ashamed of the gospel, not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. It has the power to save everyone who has faith. I am not ashamed of the gospel. Our letter today is to the church in Smyrna. Smyrna was an ancient city dating all the way back before the Greek times to 1200 BC, before the time of David even. So it has a rich history. It was a very cultural place. It was second in size in the area in Asia Minor to Ephesus, the church that we studied last week. But it exceeded Ephesus culturally. More libraries, more museums, more history. It was like San Francisco was to Los Angeles. It was also a city that at one time had almost dried up and was almost dead. And now it's experiencing a revival. It's coming back. In large part because of its dedication to Rome. It was extremely patriotic to Rome. It was one of the first cities to pledge allegiance to Rome in the Carthage Wars. And thus it was rewarded richly. There were temples and shrines to all the Roman gods. And most importantly, it was a hotbed for the veneration of the emperor. You see, the Romans didn't care if you worshipped some other god than one of theirs, as long as you worshipped the emperor, as long as you gave deference to the emperor and gave a sacrifice once a year to the emperor to kind of check that box off, which of course Christians could not do. Thus, the Christian church in Smyrna was persecuted, and it would get worse, as this letter will attest to, as this letter prophesizes about. You will experience persecution. So it's ironic that Smyrna, a city known for its culture, for its heritage, for its religiosity, has a church that feels downtrodden, that feels like it is poor. Feels like it is poor. And what is the message to them? Stay strong, John says. Keep doing what you're doing. Persist. You will only suffer for a while. The persecution will be brief compared to the life that is guaranteed you on the other side. Do not fear death, John says to them. It is the only church that we will study that didn't have anything negative to say about it. Only positive. Again, it doesn't say how big they were. It doesn't say what a magnificent building they had or not. Maybe they did, maybe they did not. Just that they were rich. Why were they rich? Because of their strength of spirit. The message to them was to keep going. Maybe they wanted something different. Maybe they wanted a different message. Maybe they wanted to change things up. Maybe they wanted to try something new, but no, that wasn't their calling. Their calling was to stay strong to the gospel in this place where Satan is persecuting you, where the Jews are handing you over to the pagans, and they're not even on your side. Stay strong, for you are rich. You are richer than you think. You have a strength of spirit more so than you think. What are we willing to stand up for? What are we willing to go to the mat for? Where are we going to draw the lines about our faith? This church was called to take a stand. To stand up for what they believe in and to stay strong in that despite the pressure that they were under. We have pressure in our society today to conform. All kinds of pressure from all sides. Sometimes it is overt, sometimes it is very, very subtle. Is our patriotism getting in the way of our worship of God? Can be a subtle thing. What are we going to stand up for? Personal ethics, responsibility, of course. We're going to stand by the Ten Commandments. We're going to stand by the Beatitudes, which we studied last summer. We're going to stand by representing what the fruits of the Spirit is. We're going to light our lamp in front of our church to welcome all into our doors and into our ranks. We will stand up for that. Let's draw a line about that. Let's say that that's important to us, to be a place where all people, wherever you are in your journey of faith, can come and to sing and to pray and to be welcomed in these doors. Should we stand up for those of a different sexual orientation who are so often bullied? We should. What would Jesus do? Should we stand up for refugees coming into our country and into other countries? This week, there are many Iraqi refugees that are Christians that are being sent back facing literal persecution and death. Should we stand up to them? Yes. There are places in the world that face this kind of persecution, folks. North Korea is a place where you will be jailed for trying to spread the Christian message. Iraq is a place where you could face death, a brutal death, for being a Christian. Sudan, you could be hunted down by rival gangs and militia members if you are part of a Christian organization. We don't face that kind of persecution. Our burdens are light compared to that. Not saying that we don't have pressures, not saying that we don't have peer pressures, not saying that we don't feel like we want to be like the Joneses, but we have a lot of liberty to spread the light and the good news to people. Should we stand up for those who are struggling with addiction in their families? There's a scourge going on right now in Ohio. All over Ohio, in places like West Virginia, it's heroin. It's a huge problem. There are places that are hiring. People want to talk about jobs, but they can't find somebody eligible to work because so many people are addicted out there. If we want to heal families, heal relationships, doing something about the heroin and drug problem in our communities would go a long, long way towards doing that. What about people recently released from prison? Should we stand up for them? I've realized in the last few years that they have long odds against them. Many places won't hire them. Many places won't rent them an apartment. Even homeless shelters, they can't find a bed there. Where do they go? What do they do? If they don't have a family member to stay with, what are their options? What about exploited workers around this country and around the world? Should we stand up for them? Yes. Yes. These things will make us Christian. These things will make us rich in faith. These things will make us strong if we do these such things. There's a rich heritage of these kinds of things in the United Church of Christ. Are we going to stand with our orthodoxy and our tradition in supporting these movements of liberation and justice in our society? Are we going to stand for those who are mentally ill? 1 out of 5 people, at least in our country, experience some kind of mental illness. It's time to get it out of the shadows. It's time to talk about it. It's time to support those people. It's time to treat it like we would treat the flu or cancer. Will we stand up for them? The homeless, hunger, hungry children in our community. We're feeding children next month. We're collecting books for them. Bring in the books, share the good news with those people in that way. It does make a difference seeing those kids every day, watching them take home those books. They are excited. Should we stand up to things like human trafficking? It's right under our nose. It's like an underground. It's prevalent. It's there. It happens even in our small communities. Northwest Ohio is a hotbed for the trafficking of human beings, literal slaves. Should not happen in the 21st century? Are we going to draw a line about that? Will we say anything about that? Will we join in solidarity with organizations who work towards breaking bonds of slavery? Will we say anything about people being killed with guns and knives in our community? Will we work on changing people's hearts and minds against violence? Will we work towards peace and understanding with people who are different from us, different races, different religions? The next generations will live in a different world. They will work and live by people from different countries who speak different languages. We need to know how to get along. We need to listen to each other. When I read this letter about strength and about staying strong, I'm reminded of the story of people like Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who, during the rise of the Third Reich, drew a line and said, no, we're not going to go along with the party line, even though most churches in Germany did. They felt the pressure to do so. And for that, they paid the ultimate price. People like Oscar Romero, who felt the pressure to not speak out for poor people who were being slaughtered in villages for expressing their point of view. He paid the ultimate price. Smyrna bore fruit, that church. The city of Smyrna became instead a hotbed of Christianity. Maybe because those people in John's time in the end of the first century stood strong for what they believe in. Stand strong for what you will believe in. You may not see the fruit tomorrow or next week or next year, but you will see the fruit if we stay faithful to the gospel. Do not be ashamed of the gospel. Do not be ashamed of the things that we stand for. We need generous orthodoxy. We need the orthodoxy. It's the only vehicle and the best vehicle that God still has to spread the good news is through this institution known as church. We are it. We're still the best line of defense. We're still the best people to stand up and say, no, as Christian people, this is not okay. It's not okay that these things go on. Take a stand. Take a stand. Be generous in your love. Be generous in the gospel of sharing, of speaking up. Be not ashamed. Stay strong, my friends. Amen.